Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 656 for comics originally released on March 4th, 2020. Now, starting us off in DC is Flash number 750. So with this, they're jumping back to the old numbering because, well, it's a nice big round number. Why not?
Exactly. And it's a big one.
It's an 80-page giant, so tons of stories here. And the cover, a few things I want to talk about before we talk about the individual stories. First off, we got introduced to Paradox last issue.
Yes.
So that set it up for this. And when they'd been talking about a villain called Paradox, and I'd seen the cover of this issue of The Flash versus Barry Allen, I'm like, well, that seems like a Paradox.
Yeah.
And then I just got the shipment for the following week, which has Flash 751.
Yeah, I got that recently too. So yeah, I got that.
So these things are coming out fast.
Really quick. They're trying to speed it up or something for the 5G thing that was going to happen and maybe not going to happen now. So that's what I'm guessing.
I don't know. The first story in this issue is kind of, I guess, carrying on what had been going on in the title since we got Paradox last issue.
Yes.
It's kind of starting the next arc, I guess would be the way to say it. And I'll be honest, it didn't work great for me.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because me neither. It was more like a, you know, hate to say it, but it felt really like a fluff piece about how good the Flash is and how he impacts people's lives. And it just came off as light and airy and not really carrying the story forward other than the very end.
Well, when we hit the nine-page grid early on, or nine-panel grid page early on, where it's like, these two are going to investigate the strength and the Still Force. Kid Flash is back with the Titans. It was like a house cleaning thing of kind of recap and status quo establishment.
Yep, exactly.
And I'm like, well, that's weak.
Very weak.
And I was expecting this story to really get further than it did.
Yeah, not much happened because he was already introduced, and then it's like, it almost felt like the second introduction.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like this should have happened before the issue where they kind of recap Paradox's backstory. We should meet him first.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt too. So now it's like you had the big anniversary issue where not much happened in this issue, but maybe the next issue will be better. You know, something will actually happen.
And we don't have to wait long for it since a week later it was out, you know?
Yeah, it's a weekly book now.
But I was expecting with the cover being Flash versus Barry Allen that this story would have had that in it.
And we do not have that.
We do not have that at all.
So it's almost like a little bit of a bait and switch, because I was wondering too, and then when it ended the way it ended, I was like, okay, well, that's not what I thought was going to happen based on the cover, but oh well, we'll roll with it.
Yeah, it was good, but it was just the opening chapter of a story and not the strongest opening chapter.
Yeah, I would agree. And it was a little bit different. It felt different than the last book I read too. So I don't know. Like I said, this may have been some of Dan DiDio's like fingerprints on this. I'm not saying he changed the story or did anything, but it feels like things are being spread up and it's like this story's coming forward and things are going to happen quickly to prepare for those generations. That's just the way I feel with the stories, what's going on right now. Some of them are almost like in a placeholder type thing. Some are being sped up a little bit. It just feels a little off.
What gets me with this is they had 80 pages here.
Yeah.
They could have spent it doing a really cool kind of done-in-one epic story for Flash.
And that's what you would think you would get in leaving off with maybe a teaser for 751. This is where the thing should have happened. Something should have happened here.
Yeah, I was...
And not what we got.
Yeah, I was not amazed by this story.
Yeah, and what was funny is I read that, and then I read the next little short story by Geoff Johns, and I liked the second story better than the first one.
The one with Captain Cold?
Yeah. It wasn't great, but I enjoyed it more than the first one.
I can see that. I didn't care much for it. It was okay, but it was light. There was no depth to it. There wasn't a whole lot of flash to it.
No depth at all. It was just kind of like a done-in-one funny little story in 8 pages or whatever.
Well, and it seemed to be set at a arbitrary past point in time when Wally was the Flash.
Yeah, which was kind of weird. I thought that was bizarre. Did they just let him do that because that's the Flash he likes? I don't know. Geoff Johns, I just don't know why that was.
If you're going to tell a Wally West Flash story in this kind of issue, you get Mark Waid to do it.
Yeah, that would be nice.
He's the guy most associated with that Flash.
Yeah, and actually, now with the shakeup in leadership, he may write some stuff over at DC again. We don't know.
Don't know.
I would enjoy it.
I would, too. I'd love it. I think Mark Waid's a great writer. He's now chief creative officer or something over at Humanoids, though, maybe?
Yeah, with the new little superhero universe they have. Yeah, that's true.
So, I didn't think the Captain Cold story was bad, but it was one that it was, you're in, you're out, and there's no meat to it.
There's no meat to it. It's light and airy. It's something to make you go, oh, he's not so bad. Something like that. And what was weird is, I didn't enjoy it that much, but I enjoyed it more than the first story because I'm just like, I felt like the story didn't go anywhere. It didn't progress. So I was just like kind of frustrated with the first story.
That's fair because it had a beginning, a middle, and an end of something.
Yeah, something.
So there's that. I'll grant you that. I can see that. We then get to the next story of why you? Why is Barry Allen the Flash? Which is a very interesting question to ask since you could have answered with, well, it could have been Wally, it could have been Jay, it could have been, you know, a few other people even.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of not what we get. We get this bizarre, he's using the Speed Force for a trick he calls the Speed Mind. Where he somehow sends his consciousness into the Speed Force and checks, like, other timelines?
That was weird. I was like, what is this? I kind of chuckled at that. I was just like, I didn't know what to think of it.
I didn't think much of it.
Me neither.
The first alternate version, who cared? But the second one, I actually would have liked it if that character had been, you know, if we'd crossed over with that character and gotten more of her.
Yeah, it would have been more interesting because this story really fell flat for me. I didn't enjoy it.
We never saw enough of these other versions or anything, more than a page or two, to get any kind of depth or anything.
Yeah, nothing. It's just like, you know, just an idea. Hey, I had an idea. Here's one. Hey, I have an idea. Here's one. And you don't see anything with it. And it's like, okay, maybe we'll see this again. Maybe we won't. I'm guessing we will not.
I'm guessing we won't, although I wouldn't mind if we did.
Yeah.
But it's like the story just glanced off the idea.
Yeah. Just like he just wanted to say, here's what I could do if I was writing the character. And that was Brian Buccioletto?
Yeah.
Francis Manapul in the art.
And again, it wasn't bad, but it was just a couple of pages in and out, and we're moving on to the next story.
Yeah, and we had this a lot with the Wonder Woman Big Spectacular, too, where it's like these little stories, and they're just not much behind them.
Yeah, yeah. That's what disappointed me. I mean, even The Flash of All Worlds by Marv Wolfman, who I think is a terrific writer.
Yep, next one.
Yeah, it harkened back to Silver Age stories where, like, The Flash would get turned into a puppet or this or that or whatever. It was fine. I did not like the art style at all.
Yeah, what was up with that? Why did they choose this artist? I was like, it's just bizarre. Because Marv Wolfman, great writer, has, you know, been in the industry for years, decades, and it seems like they just gave him a horrible artist for this.
I think it's a style that they probably felt fit the story, but I felt didn't.
I agree.
It's too cartoony, it's too exaggerated, and when the point of the story is he's going through all of these transformations into early Silver Age kind of wackiness, I almost would have gone kind of with a more realistic artist.
Yeah, it would have been much better if they would have done that. But the art, this is one of the ones where it's like the art almost takes you a little bit out of the story, because you just keep looking at it, it doesn't really fit in with everything else we have in the book.
It totally took me out of the story.
Yeah, so I hate to say that, but when the art's that different, it just pulls me out, and then I don't connect to the story at all.
Yeah, and it was one where, while I know the sorts of covers and things it's alluding to, it didn't have enough room here to have any substance to it or any meaning that it's, again, in, out, we're done.
Yeah, I agree.
and I don't mean that in the best of ways.
No, it's definitely not. It's not like a done in one and it was like a funny page or, you know, hey, that was kind of cool that they were able to do this in this amount of space. It was like, why did they do this? I don't understand.
But then we hit the at the starting line story.
Yes.
And this is one where we're in, we're out, we're done in all of the right ways.
I would agree with that. That was kind of entertaining. The art style, beautiful in there.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful
David art. Marquez, great stuff.
I was just like, this was one of the better stories in here.
And it featured the Jay Garrick Flash, and this is set in Keystone in 1940.
Yep.
So I think this is another one of those, you know, Generation Zero to 5G, you know, that sort of thing going on here.
That's what I was thinking, yep.
I thought it was, again, I love the art style, I love the character, and I like how they didn't busy up the costume.
Yeah, I agree. And I was with you. I was like, oh, this is what we're going to see in Gen 1, this character. And I was like, I could read more of this.
When we hit the Clifford DeVoe version of the Thinker, for me, I think of the Cliff Carmichael version of the Thinker, which was a Firestorm villain, because I knew it was a new version of a previous character, but I hadn't really read tons of the previous character. This is a version of the original Thinker, which was a Golden Age Flash villain. Made perfect sense to use him. This is the character that was the basis for the villain in one of the seasons of the Flash TV show. He was used here as, well, we need a villain. Okay.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and we get a couple of others in a panel of just encountered Ragdoll, I guess the Fiddler, Shade, and I think Rival is the his kind of reverse Flash.
Exactly. And this is kind of like the whole altering of the history of DC, you know, because we talk about Wonder Woman being the first character of the DC universe with this new 5G thing that's coming about. And here it's referenced at the beginning of this, which I kind of liked how they were tied together there.
Oh, yeah. Same here. And Jay is dealing with this lingering doubt, this voice in his head. And we actually get to see whose voice that might be.
Yeah, that was cool.
That's interesting. That's cool. I like it. I like kind of how he dealt with it. And what I loved was this was a quick done in one. Basically, Jay is fighting the Thinker, and okay, we're done in a few pages. But the last bit on that last page of to be continued in the Flash in 2020. I'm taking that to mean Jay Garrick is actually going to show up in this title this year, and we're going to get some Golden Age goodness.
That's the way I took it too. So I think it's going to be pretty cool. And I don't know if this means there'll be a creative team shift to the creators here or if it'll be the same creator. But I read this and I really enjoyed it and I would like to read more of it.
I think this should have been the last story in the book.
I agree because then I flipped the page and I thought it was just art. And I was like, oh no.
No. Well, we got some pinups between and stuff. And the JSA one here wasn't bad. I would have gone a little more Flash-centric myself, but okay.
Yeah.
When we get to that next story, it's an epilogue to Flash Forward.
Yeah.
I was not expecting an epilogue to that in this issue. I mean, it makes sense, I guess, but, you know, you had an actual miniseries. You could have, I don't know, done the epilogue in the miniseries.
Yeah, if I read Flash Forward and then, let's say I didn't read that, I miss out on this material, which I guess is a big portion of that story. I mean, it's what's going on with the Flash. So it's very bizarre, and it makes me feel bad for the character.
Yeah, I didn't like how that miniseries ended. I didn't like the status quo change for Wally, which this goes a little further on. There was another status quo change that I felt just came out of nowhere. It's like, okay, I guess they're doing that because they can. If you haven't read the Flash Forward series, I would kind of say skip it. There's a two-page splash here that really, you could even skip Heroes in Crisis for that matter. It gives you the high level, here's what you need to know about Wally.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, this story, I was just like, I would like to not revisit this anymore in the future, personally.
The problem is, when we hit that second two-page splash, there are no secrets, I see every crisis, yada, yada, yada. This, to me, makes me really, really worried about the future of DC.
Yeah, and when I read that very last thing, it says, to be continued in Mage Generation Zero, I was like, was this the thing that they were doing that led to the firing?
I don't
because
know, but
this worried me here too. I was just like, this just doesn't seem enjoyable, the changes in here. I'm like, I think this is going to upset a lot of longtime readers.
I don't think the problem is the changes. I think the problem is the tentativeness of the change, I guess to say. Basically, and I'm going to get a little spoiler here because I think it's relevant to the ongoing DC conundrum.
Yeah.
There are two versions of events that happen that Wally in the Mobius chair is witnessing.
Yeah.
One kind of old school, one kind of New 52 version for almost his origin, the Teen Titans origin, kind of a splash of the Flash family, I guess would be the way to put it.
Yeah.
And it comes down to time is broken, it's unaligned, there's like two conflicting timelines for the main timeline in the DC universe.
Yeah.
And Generation Zero in May and the Generation One and all that other stuff, maybe it'll clean it up, maybe it don't. But here I was thinking the DC continuity couldn't get more convoluted and complicated, and clearly I was wrong.
Yeah, because this is literally mashing these two things together, it seems like.
Well, that's the thing, is it's not.
It's not. They're separate.
They can't both have happened, yet they're saying they both did.
And he's like, and he literally says, time no longer aligns. And does that mean they're going to dip back and forth between these? Like you said, they're not meshed. They're not going together at the same time. They're going on in different universe, or I don't know what the word is, but they can't both exist and make sense for DC.
But it flat out says they do.
I know, which is bizarre.
This is one that makes my brain just kind of go pop, you know, yeah, and not in a good way.
They've written themselves into a corner, it feels like, by doing stuff like this. And so they both exist, yet fans like the old characters, but the new characters are still there, or the new 52 characters. And now we may have a new set of characters coming out. We just don't know.
For a lot of these things, it's, you know, you got two camps, more than two. You've got one that like the version on the left, one that like the version on the right, another that doesn't care, another that doesn't like either, whatever. You know, it's hard to figure out what the hell's going on in the DC universe when clearly they haven't decided. And this is where Dan DiDio's departure of DC leaves them in a very odd position of they're already moving down this path, and now Jim Lee's saying, it's only going to impact some stuff.
Yeah, it's almost like the books were written, the contracts were done, you know, the creative stuff's coming out. So there's, and books are built around changes that you're making. So if I'm making a generation 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 books, and those are coming out, what are you going to treat them like Elseworlds? Because I'm assuming they had a plan to spin off books out of that because of what happens inside of those generation books. So now if he's going to come through and say that doesn't really matter, that could gunk up the whole thing about what's coming out afterwards. So I don't know how they're going to fix this, depending on how altering and how universe changing these books are.
Well, at a simple approach, they could either, if we split it strictly in half, they could either go with one timeline that's got a continuity, or multiple timelines, and each book is just set in a different one.
Yeah, almost like having the Ultimate Universe over at Marvel, which they could do, just have here's our Ultimate books, or here's our New 52 books, and here's the other ones.
The irony with that approach is that's the exact thing that Crisis was meant to fix, because it was deemed as confusing.
And it is back. Well, I don't know. It looks like it's back. I just...
It's worse than ever.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this. And I got to that, and I was just like, this leaves me just uninspired. I liked the story right before this, you know, with J. Garrick. I like that.
And that then it went had me excited for the Generation 1, 2, 3, all that kind of stuff. This had me really worried.
Yeah, this had me worried and thinking, man, I may not want to read more of this if this is what I'm having to read.
I think the problem is they've messed up their continuity so badly, and trying to go with the it all happened, it all matters, or none of it does, or whatever, it's getting increasingly hard for them to fit things back together because they've broken and rebuilt this universe so many times.
Yeah, which is weird, and it's almost like Crisis was the worst thing that ever happened to DC, while also being such a great thing that happened in DC. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I think if they'd come out of Crisis with a clear game plan and stuck to their guns or whatever, and just said, okay, we're going with a streamlined continuity from here on out or whatever, they might have been okay. But even initially, there's, you know, a lot of, well, we're going to retool Superman, and then a little bit later, Wonder Woman, a little bit later, this character and that character. Oh, wait, since we said Superman no longer was Superboy, what does that do for the Legion? So we got to go fix that, and they had to keep patching it and patching it. and you get to where you don't have enough solid structure left to have a stable skeleton of a universe.
And that almost mandates or requires a reboot of the whole thing. And then when you do that, you alienate people who may like X, Y, or Z book or iteration, or maybe a new reader who came in and I was reading, and let's say I started with a new 52, and now you go back to hero, you know, the heroes the way they were with Rebirth, and now that alienates me a little bit.
Exactly.
And so you have this push and pull about, I like this character, I like it this way, I like it that way, and that's not a good way to be.
You're polarizing and splitting your audience, and I think we see that a lot of certain characters come back on an almost every other decade kind of a basis as new writers come in and are bringing back the characters they fondly remember as when they were reading as kids coming in or something.
Exactly, and instead of rebooting the character, you could literally have changed a creative team and righted the ship on each individual character if you hadn't have rebooted them and said, here's this new guy, here's his new origin. When you do that, it's impossible to fix it because now you physically have two things.
Well, and you need to know what fixed means, and that's what I don't think is clear for the DC Universe.
Yeah, we don't know right now. And I am a little bit worried. Like, it's weird. I'm excited and worried because the Generation books, I read the Wonder Woman thing and I loved it. I read the Jay Garrick Flash stuff in here, loved it, and that got me excited. And then I read that little bit at the end. I'm like, ooh, that's not good. And so it's like I'm excited, and yet I have trepidation going forward with what they spin out of it.
Well, just like
what they do.
Two timelines that Wally was seeing. We're seeing two trajectories that the Generation stuff could go on.
Two very extreme.
That looked very positive to us, and then this flash-forward look that looks very not so positive to me.
And I'm hoping Jim Lee picks the right path, or the correct path for me.
I hope so, too. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm kind of up in the air right now, but it left you on you and I, basically, by how we're talking, on uneasy footing with that last story.
I would say the highlight of this for me was very clearly the Jay Garrick story.
Yes.
A lot of the others were okay, but they were just shallow.
Very shallow.
They were filler material.
That's what it felt like, filler. It felt like uninspired, just stuff to fill pages.
I mean, to me, this was not a great anniversary issue.
No.
I'd say it was probably one of the weaker ones from DC lately.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe I'd have gone with a story set in the Flash Museum covering the history of the Flashes or something, and maybe have some kind of a twist reveal at the end of a future Flash or a past Flash from a generation we've lost sight of or something like that. Something.
Yeah, I know you always harp on this, and I agree with you, that it should be a celebration of the character when it's an anniversary issue. And this was not a celebration. It was some filler with some big-name writers, but it felt like a lot of filler in there with one cool story near the end. Not at the end, but near the end.
We didn't even get all of the characters who've gone by the name Flash in this issue.
Nothing, no.
I mean, there's I can think of at least two, I think, that were skipped over.
Yeah, there was a lot of Flashes. I mean, you even have the, you know, characters that from Young Justice. I'm trying to remember that guy's name right now. Impulse. They could have referenced him, even though he's not a Flash, you know. They could have had a lot of Speed characters in here, you know, just that they referenced and give a nod to.
Yeah, they had, you know, a couple of them, one or two panels of one or two stories or whatever, but they were the Flash for a while. Shouldn't they get something? I mean, if this had been almost like a tag team race back through time or something.
Could have been cool.
Yeah, could have been a lot of fun. And this wasn't horrible, but it was just barely better than average.
That's the way I felt. Yeah, I agree.
I'm going with a C+ on this. It was disappointing. It was a missed opportunity. And I think it could have and should have been better.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I gave it a C. I said it's an average book. And, you know, for I guess it was $7.99 for this. It felt like it wasn't worth it. I really did enjoy that Jay Garrick story, though. I think that made the book worthwhile, worth picking up. But would I recommend someone go out and pick this up? Probably not. You could probably skip it, and you wouldn't miss out on too much.
At some point, when they collect the Generation stuff, I hope they include that Wonder Woman story from that issue, the Jay Garrick one from here, and the other sorts of things along those lines.
Yeah, they're going to have a Robin one, I'm sure. And
oh, absolutely. If they don't, they've missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
So it's disappointing. We'll see where they go. We've got a number of 80th anniversary, 100-page super spectaculars, whatever, coming up. We'll see what they do there. But given the overall quality of this issue, and the competing trajectories of where they may be going, I'm worried about DC.
I understand exactly where you're coming from, and you are the longtime DC reader, so it's scarier for you to say it than me. But yeah, I'm a little bit worried too.
Yeah. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is 2020 Rescue Number 1, or Rescue 2020 Number 1. It's, I've seen it both ways. The way they got it on the cover implies,
Rescue 2020?
Yeah, but they don't have an actual indicia that, hell, I don't know. Either way, it's part of the 2020 storyline that's going on through all the Iron Man books they've created for this storyline. I'm all in on this for the most part, but it's been okay.
Yeah, that's the way I felt about it. I'm in on the main story. I didn't buy a lot of the spin-offs. Like this is like a 3 or 4 issue book. I didn't buy these. So, the main story, it's been okay. It's been good. And then this one I got to and I was just like, I initially, you know, the first thing that hit me was like, the art's not really to my liking.
Yeah.
And then I was like, the story's kind of like a by the numbers type thing. And once again, it felt a little bit uninspired for me.
Well, first question I've got for you. Is it just me, or does there seem to be a lot more AI robots in the Marvel Universe than there seemed to be prior to this story?
Yeah, all of a sudden they're popping up out of everywhere.
It's like everybody's toaster has suddenly got an AI in it that wants freedom or something.
Yeah, I was like, we never saw this before, but they are everywhere. And literally you get to the sound studio in here, which I guess is run by AI.
Yeah. Now, the premise of this particular story, which features Pepper Potts, cool character, happy to see that.
Me too.
She is going to get DNA samples from Tony's parents, because Tony's once again gotten himself into an odd situation and effectively needs to be rebooted biologically, which, you know, not the first time for him, probably won't be the last time. But why from his parents, why not from Tony himself? I mean, doesn't he have that on file somewhere?
Thank you. That's what I was asking. I was like, that would be so random because, you know, this chromosome and this chromosome from mom and dad does not make the same children every time. You would think they'd want to go to his DNA. They must have his DNA somewhere.
Well, if not Tony, and Tony's not around to have it, okay, fine, then the Avengers, or Reed Richards, or Hank McCoy, the Beast over at the X-Men, or T'Challa, the Black Panther, or, you know, half a zillion other people in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, someone has to have a piece of hair or something.
This isn't the first time Tony is monkeyed with his DNA. The whole extremist thing is part of it. He wasn't smart enough to have a backup of the original somewhere?
You would think.
So that bothered me a little bit.
I agree. I was with you there because I thought that was bizarre.
And I'm going to nitpick on the art just a little bit. When she goes to see his biological mother.
Yes.
We'll skip the whole studio thing. When they get back to her place.
Okay.
They are having a cup of coffee or tea or whatever, which seems odd because I would have figured the coffee maker wanted freedom or something. But she's looking behind her into the room behind her, and there's a hairbrush on the shelf.
Yes, I'm looking at that now that you're saying
which
that.
Which becomes a story point.
Yes.
And I'm like trying to figure out how she can kind of see it from where she's sitting.
I agree.
But then, if you flip through the next few pages to get a layout of this place, I can't even figure out where that shelf or ledge or whatever is supposed to be.
Yeah, that's bizarre.
Because when the drones attack...
Now that you say
it,
I'm looking at them, I'm like, yeah, that's weird.
When the drones attack, is there another room off on the side? I don't know. It's not a big deal. It's one of those things, it's easy for artists to not really take the time to lay out what does the apartment or whatever look like.
Yeah.
To figure out how these things are going to be. And it was clear that, hey, they're sitting down and having coffee, and I could just tell the script had a note of, and there's a hairbrush she notices. This is important later. Make sure to draw it in now, because we're going to reference it later.
That was funny.
The other thing about the art, and this is as much the story as or the concept of the character as anything else.
Yeah.
When we first get to London a few pages earlier, she's okay. Obviously got the rescue helmet on, not a big deal. It retracts. Pepper has long hair.
Oh, yeah.
Not a big deal. But when the helmet comes back up, don't you think the hair is going to get kind of, I don't know, mashed or caught or something in that?
Yeah, it's going to rip that hair right off her head. Yeah, that's funny. I didn't even think about that. I was looking at it like, yeah, now that you say it.
That's one. I see the problem all the time in Power Rangers and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
The magic of morphing.
That's hilarious. Now that you say it, I'm looking at it. I'm like, yeah, that's true. That would not be a pretty sight to see it go back up.
I'm also trying to figure out just how old Pepper is.
That's true, because she does look almost like varying ages in here, and she looks pretty young to me.
Yeah, but she's got two adopted kids that are all grown up now.
Yes, but you look at her, and she looks almost like a teenager in here at points.
I'm willing to let that go with the, okay, the artist just can't do ages very well, but maybe she's, I don't know, 40 or something. I mean, I'm sure we got references to the kids at some point, but what little I recall of them, they were, I don't know, 8 to 10-ish, maybe, tops?
Yeah.
And we just never saw them grow up, move on, and she doesn't do anything with them anymore. I mean, what kind of parenting is that?
Yeah, she's done with the kids. She did her job. She had the kids. Now she's living her life, living her best life.
just how grown up are they, and what the hell happened to them? I mean, maybe they were smart and got the hell out of Dodge, given all that goes around her.
Yeah, they just left. We're out of here.
I expect to cut to some Amish farm somewhere and find them.
Yeah, they're being raised around no technology, none of this weirdness going on.
Would you blame them?
I would not, especially with the coffee makers attacking the humans. That's funny.
You know, the whole story was okay. I just didn't think it really put Pepper in the best possible light. We've seen her as rescue before in a much more heroic way.
Yeah.
And this was a missed opportunity.
I agree. I mean, the writer tried to make the book a little bit deep, going into the ethics of things right before the attack happens here near the end. But to me, the book was a little bit shallow. I felt like I could have skipped this and maybe read, you know how they do the recap at the beginning of the Marvel? So I'm reading the main 2020 book, and they'll be like, oh, by the way, see, you know, Rescue 2020 and this character, blah, blah, blah. They'll give you a little blurb, and that's all I need to know, because I felt like this wasn't really a huge part, but who knows, it may be. I just didn't feel like I needed to read this.
I was surprised by her mission at the start of this, having read the other 2020 stuff.
Yeah.
And at the end of this, okay, she gets the DNA sample.
Yep.
That simply could be, yeah, I went to go find her mom, I got the sample, I'm done. Line of dialogue, you're done.
Yeah, you don't need a 3-issue spinoff for that.
I think this is a 1-issue thing, but I'm not sure.
Oh, it's a 1-issue. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm assuming it's a 3-issue thing.
They've got a checklist in here, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do. Let me see. Because I honestly don't know. Some of them were 1, 2, 3.
I take it back. There's a second issue to this.
So something else is going to happen.
She's got to get Dad's DNA.
Yeah, exactly. Mom, now you need Dad. So we are not done.
I'm not putting out high hopes for that one.
You're making me laugh tonight, which is good.
Yeah, I was disappointed with this, and it was, to me, the epitome of filler content.
That's how I felt. I felt like the last two books that we reviewed, we got a lot of filler material, a lot of stuff that wasn't super important to either one of the last one, the character and what was going on. And this one, I felt like we got something that wasn't integral to the story of 2020. And so I'm like, it makes it almost feel like a little cash grabby at that point. It's like, okay, you have a story and it's a newer writer. So, okay, we're going to let them, you know, test their writing chops. But, you know, when you're looking at a $4 book, even with our discounts, you know, let's say you're paying $2 or $2.40, you know, I don't want to be a test subject for a new writer unless it's good material. If it's non-essential, why am I reading this?
Yeah, I think there could have been a story here where following her to find her getting the DNA or whatever could have had some relevance down the line. Maybe she got the wrong DNA somehow or something.
Something, or flesh out the character a little bit more, that maybe she's going to be a bigger part in Tony's, I mean, she is a big part, but a bigger part of the rescue character going forward, you know, or
she's something. Doing it reluctantly and she's trying to wrap her mind, is this really going to bring him back? Is it not something?
Some kind of emotional weight to the story or just something to it, but it just felt very by the numbers and very shallow.
Yeah, it came down to, it happened, okay, and I can guess what's going to happen with the next issue.
You know, exactly. So,
for me, C- on this, it's one that, frankly, people should skip.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I went with a C-. I was just like, it's not broken completely. It's not like D material, but it's not enjoyable, and it's not something that you should probably spend your money on with the way budgets are, you know?
Yeah, I think they overexpanded the 2020 storyline, and this is one of the things they shouldn't have bothered with.
I agree.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is Join the Future number one from Aftershock, and this is set ostensibly in the future. We start with a good sales pitch on the future, and golly, it looks swell.
It looked really swell. I wanted to live there myself. Did you get a feeling of The Matrix when you were reading that?
A little bit of The Matrix, and a lot of bit of the, why are they trying so hard to recruit new citizens to this place?
Exactly. That gave you the unsettling feeling. It was like, it's so good, it's perfect. Why are you recruiting and why are you pushing?
it's sci-fi, it's this wonderful future, and then it's like, okay, are aliens going to be eating people? What's the downside to this? Because you know it's got to be horrific.
Yeah, it's true. And one thing, I don't go into politics, but it was kind of funny how you see the little political things, and they're like, hey, you have your own. Everyone has their own universal basic income. That made me laugh. I was like, this is hilarious. They're putting it into the utopia of the future.
Well, exactly. And this is the utopia. And then we hit the two-page, title page or whatever. It's like, okay, gratuitous, but fine.
Yeah.
And then suddenly we're in the Midwest, still clearly in the future, I know, because it says so, but this is like the Old West.
Yeah, literally, like, it feels and looks like the Old West. If you didn't have the future written there and the scope on the gun, the rifle that they had, you would think this is a Western.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one that could have been set,
in 1862 or something, or 1895.
1800s, yeah. And it was one of those things that, okay, when we get to the, what was the guy called? The trader or whatever that had some stuff.
I can't remember the names, I'm sorry.
Yeah. We get a little bit, and then we finally get to the point where we see the city in the background and we know, oh, we're not that far away.
Yes.
I came out of this thinking, we spent most of the issue outside the megacity in what feels like an old west town. We've gotten the sales pitch of the city. We haven't really been in the city proper, so we don't know what's going on there.
Correct.
I have no clue what the story going on here is. I don't know what the horrific downside to this future megacity is, but I mean, it's got to be one, because I can't imagine this story being, we've just got to save these poor deluded people who like living in the Old West and enjoying the ancient ways of disease and poverty. I have a hard time following that story how does that go? I mean, it'd be fun, it'd be different. But while I don't know where the hell they're going with this, enough happened that I'm curious enough to find out what's going to happen to continue on with this for a bit. It feels like it could be kind of one of those sci-fi TV shows. And I'm thinking, kind of the ones that last for about a season or two.
That's exactly how I felt. I could see this on Netflix or, even on, regular television. But yeah, like you said, lasting like Jericho did for a couple seasons or something like that.
Jericho, was it Resistance or something like that? There's about a half a dozen I could name if I could remember them.
And all of those stories I really like, and I feel for me they end prematurely, but it seems like they always do.
Yeah. It's kind of a, what if the future went wrong this way, and how do people adapt?
Yeah. So for me, that's something I really enjoy. And although this wasn't fleshed out enough, it would have done better with, like, let's say a bigger first issue or something. I always harp on that. Sometimes they need a little more or to get more material in here. I enjoyed it enough, and I'm curious enough where I'm like, I'm on board for this. This is pretty cool.
I definitely think it should have gone a little bit further than ending where it did.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it ended kind of in the middle of an action sequence, and it became to me clear who we're going to be following.
Yep.
But I don't know what her story is.
Yeah, so this definitely needs to be fleshed out a lot more. And I trust, okay, I know that not to sound biased, but certain writers, I trust them to get it done. And this was Zach Kaplan, and he did Eclipse, which we read. We reviewed it, and I really enjoyed that. So I trust that Zach Kaplan is going to do a good job with this. I wish he would have nailed this one a little bit harder, but I'm on board for it because of the writer and because I enjoyed this, and it's kind of in a genre that I enjoy.
He also did Port of Earth, Lost City Explorers. He's got a track record.
And he does good stuff. I enjoy most of what he writes.
So to me, that was a lot of what kind of helped this out.
Yeah.
And while I don't know the bigger picture of this yet, what was told was well told, and I was invested enough and curious enough. Like I said, I'm going to follow this for a bit.
Me too.
But I do agree with you that an oversized first issue could have really helped.
Yeah, I agree. And something that I noticed, not to get, you know, sidetracked too much. One, I was interested in Zach Kaplan, first Aftershock book, I think, first Aftershock, because I think he's done most of his stuff, Image, Top Cow, things like that. But also, in the latest solicits, in the latest previews catalog, the Aftershock number ones that were solicited were $4.99. And so I wonder if Mike Martz, who's the main guy who kind of started this up, or the editor, and I think he started Aftershock, I wonder if he's feeling the same thing, that 20, 22 pages isn't enough, and maybe we need to go oversized with a $4.99 book to get enough momentum in the story where people want to continue.
Yeah, but I think also they could have used the page count a little differently. I mean, we got a pretty big sales pitch at the beginning.
Yeah, that was a bit much. They could have done that in a little bit quicker, maybe.
They could have tightened that up. Hell, they could have actually put that at the end of, we've got this action scene, she's at the end of it, and she's like, well, what do I do now? Boom, give the sales pitch.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and then, well, does she not? You know, whatever.
Exactly. That would have been really cool.
So I think this was good, but I think it could have had a little bit more of a hook, or, again, maybe it's just one of those that it's not that it needs a regular one-issue kind of pilot issue, but it needs a double-sized one or something to get past the premise point.
I agree. So, like I said, I'm putting my trust in Zach Kaplan that he's going to pull it out. I did enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I didn't love it, but I really liked it. And the genre I like, so I think it's something I'm going to read.
I'm at least going to go for another issue or two, see where it goes. Again, that last page was a little bit of a turnoff in a few places because it was a little ugly,
yeah.
In terms of horrific action taking place. But it's a good writer. I was impressed with at least the sales pitch of the future. Whether it lives up to that or not, don't know. I'm going to go with an A- on this, but it's one where really that second issue can make or break this very quickly for me.
Oh, okay. I really liked it. I went with a B+, and I almost gave it the A-, man. But I think people will enjoy this if they read it. And if you didn't pick it up in the single issue, this is one where maybe the trade will even read better because of how it's broken down and what happened here. I think the trade will be really good of this.
Yeah, I could see where the trade might be a better read just because you'd be able to get through the whole story at once.
Exactly. So, anyways, that was kind of nice. We ended on a high note after the couple of mediocre books.
Yeah, well, they just need to put out better books.
I agree. That's what I wanted. It was kind of frustrating as I was reading this, and I got compelled again after reading this that, you know, my wife had a reckoning with me. Not a reckoning. She was talking to me. She's like, hey, you know, I now put my stuff from Cowabunga Comics on the credit card, and then I just paid off from my little shopping account to get points, where I'm a points addict, you know. Or
Makes sense. Make your money work for you.
Exactly. So she's like, do you spend this much every time? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you have so many comics. She's like, do you really need to be reading this much? I'm like, no. And I'm like, I don't really love all of it. And I'm like, I really got to do the deep cuts to get down to more of what I'm really enjoying because, you know, talking with her and I'm like, why am I spending money on the mediocre when I could be just reading maybe better stuff and enjoying it more when I get smaller quantities of it? So I'm going to do some cuts going forward. That's not to be negative or anything, but if you want to review anything that I am cutting, I'm completely down to get, I'll buy a digital issue or something.
I think the hard part is it's hard to know if it's going to be good or bad until we've read it. And we usually pick what we're going to review before we've read it.
Exactly. That's what's so hard. So we're going to have to work better and coordinate it to where, like, hey, let's review this. I didn't get it. I'll get a digital one, or here's a digital code for you. You know, I didn't get that one.
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of things coming up that we know we're going to want to review, like the Generation 1 or 0, whatever the hell that was.
Yeah, the Generation books you know you're going to read. If you're getting the new, what's the big event, Empire? That one's probably a big one that we'll probably both want to read, I would think.
Yeah, I'm going to get the main one. I don't know how much of the side stuff I'll get.
That's kind of where I'm getting. I'm like, I'm going to start sticking to the main book because it's like, I would like to read the 6 or 8 books that are in the main story. I don't necessarily want to read the 32 books that come out.
Yeah.
Or however many it is.
No, they've just got too many of those, and I think that was a mistake.
Yeah, so, but it's not for lack of good stuff coming out. It's just, there's almost too much stuff coming out, and it just makes it where I feel frustration when there's too much and I feel like it's a chore reading because I have to read my stuff. I feel like I've spent money on it. I need to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it creates work for me and I don't want to make my hobby feel like work.
Yeah, I think part of it though is they need to tighten up the stories. They need to give a better return on the investment to where we feel like we've gotten more for our money.
Exactly. That's exactly what I want. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed for DC, although I'm a little bit horrified going forward. And Marvel's in its stride right now, so I'm enjoying what I'm reading there. And I'm probably going to have to cut back on more of the indies. I know I like to try a lot of weird stuff out there, but I'm like, man, the weird stuff when you're not getting the big discount, sometimes I can't justify it.
The one that I read in the indie stuff that was interesting was Bang.
Bang! Did you like it?
I liked that more than I thought I would.
Well, that's one that I remember you were picking up. I think you called it out in the preview spotlight, and I did not pre-order it. But depending on what you thought of it, I am probably going to pick up the trade and check it out.
Yeah, I enjoyed the first issue. I'm curious where it goes.
That's Matt Kent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get that, but let me know how it ends up, because if it's good, I'll get the trade for sure.
Okay, I'll try to keep that in mind.
And then, not to get sidetracked, but anything else important been going on recently with you, or?
With me, I've been catching up on my reading.
Time changed, and you're tired. And
that too? Oh,
reading.
God, yeah.
You've had more of a time change than we have.
Yeah, still not totally over the jet lag, but I'm getting there. But had some time, so I'm other than what I literally just got for this week, or this next week, I'm current on my reading.
And oh, so you're current. That's nice. You got caught up in 1 week then.
Yeah, well, it was a lot easier to do having cut back on my reading.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, now, another thing I was going to ask you, I know you guys had a convention out there in Austin, I think it was, or somewhere in Texas. Was it still going on, coronavirus stuff out there, or?
I am not sure if South by Southwest is still going to go on or what. I know that WonderCon has been canceled. Emerald City Comic Con has been canceled. I thought there was one other.
Well, I know the Retailer Summit got canceled.
That's right.
Which is before MegaCon, which I was going to go to the Retailer Summit, and then I was going to go to MegaCon. So I'm probably not going to the entire thing. I'm expecting right now MegaCon to get canceled. Because it's the beginning of, it's like the first or second week of April, and this thing's kind of just ramping up, so I'm expecting a cancellation to come out soon.
You know, I'm hearing everything from the, oh, don't worry about it, it's all overhyped, not that many people are dying or whatever, to, you know, hey, let's take it seriously, let's cancel major events and stuff like that. I am not a doctor, I have no clue what the hell is going on with this coronavirus stuff, but there's a lot to be said for being a little cautious and safe, because, I mean, I've certainly seen firsthand, at like Comic-Con kind of a thing, one person's sick and the next thing you know, everybody's sick.
Yeah, and tight, confined spaces, like on planes, it seems like every time I go on an international flight, I get sick because there's somebody sick on the flight.
And, or just a crowded line at a autograph line for a convention or something.
Exactly. You get packed in there, air conditioning, recycled air, people cough, sneeze. And you walk through the cloud, and before you know it, everyone's coughing and sneezing over the days. And it got to where artists were doing fist bumps to now don't touch me to now today it's like Disneyland closed, which was kind of surprising. And the NBA's on hold, or, you know, it's just kind of weird. For you and I think we're safe. But, you know, we all know older people. And apparently if you're above 70 or above 60, it's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things that, you know, I've got celiac disease, which is an immune system disorder, as I understand it.
That's true, yeah.
So that doesn't make me think, wow, I want to go to big crowded places.
Very true.
But, you know, if people feel comfortable doing it and they can do it responsibly or whatever, and they don't think they're sick or other people get sick from other people, whatever. I mean, I don't think people should totally flip out over this, but
yeah.
I don't think they should be totally blasé about it either.
Exactly. I don't think we should all lose our minds. I think we should take it in stride, wash our hands, normal common sense stuff. Maybe don't shake hands as much as you do. And when you're opening a door, make sure you use some hand sanitizer if you have it in your car. Don't touch your face. I mean, the common sense stuff. But then also don't be blasé, because we all have family members or know people who are elderly. Mm-hmm. And if you catch it, you may be fine, but you may give it to someone you love who maybe doesn't have the immune system that you have at 30 or 40.
Exactly, either because they're older or otherwise have a compromised immune system.
Exactly. The worst thing I could do, imagine, is if I caught something and then gave it to my parents. You know, I don't want to be responsible.
Or you go to a convention, you're young, you're healthy, whatever, but you're staying up late, you're doing a lot of stuff, and you're just tired. That's going to weaken your immune system.
It really will. Yep.
So, I mean, my sister and I had considered going to a fan expo up in Dallas in another couple of weeks. You know, it's got a great lineup and stuff, but it's, do we want to do the 4-hour drive? Do we want to do all that kind of stuff? We decided, you know, no, we're not going to do it this time.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. It's changing stuff for me already in my business world, too, because, like, my company canceled all events for March right now. I'm expecting April will come. Mm-hmm. So I had a, you know, meeting in Jacksonville. You know, there I was supposed to stay in a hotel up there. You know, not doing that. Come April, we had another thing we were going to be going to. Can't do that. And then I had won an award. So, like, I qualified to fly over to Dublin and go on a cruise from Ireland up to Scotland and all around up there.
Oh, cool. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. And I'm like, I don't know if I'll be going on that cruise in June. Who knows? Travel ban and stuff. I hopefully this, you know, goes away soon or they get a vaccine, but just keeping my fingers crossed.
I mean, I hope they get it under control because, I mean, people are getting sick. People have died from this and it's not unique. They die from other stuff too.
Exactly.
But it comes down to, you know, the risk assessment and stuff like that.
Exactly. I agree with you. Anyways, I'm just going to continue to be my normal germaphobe self. I'm a germaphobe as it is, so I'm in good hands. My wife won't let me touch anything without putting hand sanitizer on me.
Well, yeah, and it comes down to, you know, be safe, be aware of what's going on, and, you know, keep up with what the CDC and other, you know, health organizations are saying.
Exactly, yeah. So, anyways, hopefully things get better, because I just don't want it to continue. It's making me nervous, I would say, and I don't like feeling nervous.
Well, it's again one of those things that it's officially a pandemic. It's going around the world and stuff like that. And you know, at some point, a year, 2 years from now, we're going to be getting the stories of the global pandemic going around. They'll say it's not coronavirus. They'll fictionalize the virus or whatever. And either it would be the basis for a sci-fi series of, you know, something, you know, horrific happens or people turn into superheroes or, you know, whatever. It's going to be something that gets into the zeitgeist of premises to start a story.
Exactly. I'll read that comic when it comes out.
Provided we're all still alive to read it, you know?
Exactly. Let's hope.
Let's hope. Definitely, definitely. But again, yeah, conventions, I don't think they're totally overreacting to be canceling them right now. I hope that's a short-term thing. I hope that, you know, the medical community is able to get this under control and everyone's okay or whatever. But, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's an overreaction because, like you said, every time I've gone to, which not often, I've been to a couple cons. You know, I went to MegaCon a couple years ago and just going there, you know, you come home, you get the scratchy throat, you get the stuff. So it's just like, I don't like being in those crowds anyways. And now if you add a new pandemic to it, I'm like, I'm good with not going.
Exactly.
I don't need to be sick.
I'm glad this is a year I'm planning on sitting out Comic-Con.
Yeah.
So don't need to deal with that.
So you're planning on it anyways, even without the pandemic?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
This will be the first Comic-Con I'm not going to since, I think, 92, give or take a year.
Holy mackerel. That was quite a run.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And it may be closed for you. It may not be by choice.
I was going to say, it would be funny if the year I missed, they don't have it.
And then you can say I kept the streak alive because that year they canceled it.
They've already canceled WonderCon. I think they're canceling some stuff at the Comic-Con Museum. So, again, they're trying to do what's responsible.
Yeah.
And again, I'd rather people act out of an abundance of caution, even if it's perhaps a little too much, than not enough and have people suffer because of it.
Exactly. I'm with you on that. Cool.
So let's see, the April previews is going to come out on March 25th. That's going to be Preview Spotlight 150. And the deadline for that is going to be Saturday morning, April 4th. Hopefully we'll have lots of good clips and stuff for that.
Definitely.
Regular format, one clip per pick and stuff. Looking forward to getting those. As we record this, I've got a ton of clips already for the previous episode, which submission will have gone past, you know, the previous Saturday to this getting released on the Monday. But yeah, it looks like it'll be a good episode that'll go up right after this.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, anything else?
No, that pretty much does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Young Justice number 14 from DC, Cable number 1 from Marvel, and Stealth number 1 from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.